And welcome to our Good Place podcast that is run by Good Place Innovators, a team of researchers, educators and student fellows passionate about transforming communities with an extra sensitive eye for our place, local context and true community needs. Our project focuses on the notion of entrepreneurial embeddedness, the emotional connection to our places and co-creation of value with our communities. My name is Radka Newton. I'm a senior teaching fellow in strategy and innovation at Lancaster University Management School, education service designer and a lead of Good Place Innovators project funded by the Enterprise Educators UK. In this podcast, we're exploring the concept of good. We have been exploring how to make places good, and today we are joined by Professor Steve Kempster, lecturer in leadership in the Management School, who has been exploring links between business value and social impact, and will debate with us today how growth could be good. In 2019, Steve co-edited a book called Good Dividends, Responsible Leadership of Business Purpose, and it's my pleasure to bring the concept of good dividends to our podcast. Steve, welcome.
Good to be here.
Steve, let's start with your perception of good. So why not great, amazing, or excellent?
So the word good, I think in one way, is that the idea of the good dividends is to link business value and social impact together. So it's a different argument about what is business. So in the first instance, if the business value is not greater, then that's problematic. So if we were engaging in social impact and value was being lost, that's poor. So we must see an argument that it's good. The profits are getting bigger. So then you could say bigger dividends. Then you move to a notion that it should be continual and sustainable. You should be able to keep creating those dividends that are greater. So that's good rather than greater. But the key reason is it's underscored in a moral way, that the way the work is undertaken, the way that the business is pursued, the way that social impact is generated is a good thing for society and it's a good thing for the business. And I think finally, there's also a sort of Mars Corporation pursued this and have pursued this for a number of decades now. What is the right level of profit? So if you are making an extraordinary dividend, extraordinary profit, there's some exploitation going on there. Is that really sustainable? Is it morally good? Have we got the right balance to all stakeholders? So good has a sort of more balanced, rounded way of seeing it.
Yeah, and I think in our project, we probably take the same approach. So good place. So for us, it means get the basics right, you know, get the good right, and then maybe we can see better or amazing. But I think sometimes the getting the basics right is probably the most challenging thing in business and I suppose in life as well.
I think so. You're sort of nudging towards good for who? So the view of the good dividends is good for a whole range of stakeholders. So you would have the community as good for the community, that the business is doing well. But if the business is doing well, is the community likewise doing well as a consequence? Are the employees who are often embedded in the community doing well? Are they getting better and better and being enhanced? Are the suppliers who are typically related to the community, are they doing better and better? And even the planet. By what we do and how we do it, the planet has impact on all of our communities. So are we doing better? So I think a stakeholder view around good is an important orientation.
Mm. So there's some sort of a wholesomeness around it, isn't there? And this year you've launched a real popular workshop for our regional SMEs, the Good Growth. So what is that about? So, you know, can growth be bad as well?
Oh, it's a bit like growth of cancer. Can cancer be bad? Not many people would say cancer is a really good thing. So the analogy there is to what extent, if a company is doing exceptional in terms of its profit, who's it exploiting? Which stakeholders are not getting the best value? So if we go to that original tenant that I was talking about, the greatest good for the greatest number, that moral underpinning. So we take a stakeholder view. We're looking for growth in which all those stakeholders are enhanced collectively. So you're not singling out one stakeholder, let's say the shareholder, that would maximise its return at the expense of others. So I think it's quite common, and I think many people listening would be able to point to many examples of where growth of a particular orientation has been very bad for society, bad for communities. Why do we have plastics kicking around the oceans? Here's the interesting thing, Radhika. Mm. People in the Mediterranean eating fish down there, they think at least a quarter of every person eating fish down there has got microplastics inside them.
Well, scary. Mm.
So extraordinarily good growth by some companies shoving plastics out in the Mediterranean has created a real danger problem for others.
And I suppose many people associate growth with financial growth as well, so quite a narrow-minded view, whilst I think you are providing us with much more holistic view from the company point of view, but like you said, from the stakeholder point of view.
Yeah, so is growth, and we often think of growth as gross domestic product, GDP. And so if a country is getting wealthier and wealthier by GDP, yet we're seeing greater and greater impoverished people, poverty in housing, poverty in food, poverty in education, yet our GDP is getting greater and greater, there's something that's wrong about that growth that isn't seeing the distribution of those benefits to all those stakeholders.
So when I attended your workshop, what I really enjoyed, the sort of concept that you talk about, the regenerative and the degenerative continuum. And I wonder whether for our listeners, whether you can help us understand that that difference on that continuum.
So let me unpack it in a slightly more nuanced way, if I may. So if anybody's listening and they've got a whiteboard next to them with a pen, they can create their little 2x2 model here. So if you imagine on the one hand, we've got a market logic, which most businesses pursue day in, day out, often referred to as neoliberal, self-centered, self-interest orientation. And that is potentially growing well for the business, one stakeholder, that finance dividend. But many other potential stakeholders are being disadvantaged in that process. So we've established that that wouldn't be good growth. It's exceptional orientated for one stakeholder. So that's market logic, but it's doing pretty well in that respect. Then you could have the social logic where charities and social enterprises are doing great good for their communities, but their ability to scale up in the same way as a business can is dramatically limited. Now, if you take either of those models, the social logic or the market logic, those enterprises in the market logic or those charities in the social logic, they could be wasting resource. They could be, yes, damaging the world, damaging the planet, damaging our communities, the place we live in. But they could be damaging people they employ. And they could be wasting all sorts of physical resources and the potential. And therefore, that's degenerative growth of either the for-profit business or the charity. Let's flip that and say, and let's push the point. Let's go beyond sustainability, which is limiting the amount of harm a business does. And now let's flip it to regenerative. Because that business exists, so the world, the various stakeholders, are better because that business exists. Yes, the share owners are better, but so are the employees, so are our communities, so is the planet, so are shareholders. So we get the nice virtuous notion of regenerative. Because a business is enhancing the world, it becomes regenerative. So we can see the contrast between wasting resource and damaging things, which is degenerative, and a movement away from this market logic and the social logic is almost they always have to be separate. And regenerative allows us to come back together and say, what would happen if a charity is able to scale up in great scope to actually impact many, many more people? Or if a business could scale up and create great impact on its local community? Well, that would be regenerative.
Mm. But that takes a lot of commitment, I suppose, from the business leader, even maybe to think like that. So I wonder whether maybe for smaller businesses in our region, whether they may be thinking, well, you know, this is not for me. This is, you know, I'm just here. I just need to make the profit to start with. Maybe it's a bit of an afterthought still. I'm not sure. It sounds very ambitious, you know, and maybe slightly intimidating for me if I was to become an entrepreneur, thinking, oh gosh, you know, there is a lot to think about, to take into consideration, a lot of maybe consultation. Do you have any examples of this practice?
Okay, yeah. Let me give you the example of, I hope you won't mind, but Chris Main at Forsberg. There he is down there at Heysham Port. They employ 46 people. Great business. I would say that's a regenerative business. Now, he and I have been exploring things and working together for 3 or 4 years now. And in conversation with him, He's begun to explore that it needs to be a purpose-led business. What are we here for? For whom? Who are us stakeholders who will benefit from our business doing better and better and better? And with that clarity, what are the sets of issues that we could get involved in that would add value to our place, but equally would have value to the business? And he's done two really interesting things, Radka, really interesting things. One, he's formed a cluster, an electronic technology cluster around the LA, the Morecambe-Lancaster area. And that cluster, with a group of owner-managers, are exploring the sets of challenges that they have in their place. One of their big challenges, as is in many for many businesses, is getting employees and retaining employees. And particularly around electronic technology, the number of new recruits they can get hold of in our corner of the world is restricted in comparison to Cambridge or London or Slough or Reading. Yeah. Don't know why I said Slough, but Slough or Reading. So what they did was they gathered together, and Chris was connected. I think he'd done a talk at Lancaster and Morecambe College. And so he went into the college and said, we'd be very interested in helping you, our cluster, create a new apprenticeship scheme here in the college. We'll help you recruit for it. And not only that, we could recruit people from your apprenticeship program into our businesses, which would therefore solve a business value problem. They've set it up, I think, in the space of some 8-9 months. They've set all this up, and it's working well. And I think Chris has taken his first recruit from the program as an apprenticeship.
Yeah, so that's a really inspirational story. And I think probably from the point of view of the business, their company, they realize that maybe there is an opportunity for a new business model in a way, isn't it? So it's more a networked cluster. So they are not tackling that challenge by themselves as a company. They are looking for like-minded.
In their own area, looking for like-minded colleagues who can come together and help. The second example, same business. Chris, again, from a leadership point of view, because connections with myself, and I think yourself as well, Radka, and others in the school, has got to know other folk in the university, in the engineering department. And his business model problem is that they're winning good work, but they have to test the new bits of kit, electronic kit, that they develop for the various clients. And they're heading off down to London, Essex, those areas for test locations where they can get that approved, so they can then give it to the client. And so he went to head of engineering in the department just next door and put forward an idea that what about a test center here in your brand new building that's going up? And so he helped them bid for, I think, some other money in the Northwest to fund a test, to get the university to put a bid in, other funding to put a bid in. And there's now going to be a test center in our building just next door. And so this cluster are going to bring work to the university. Not only income stream for the university, it saves an enormous amount of cost for all those members of the cluster, but also all the students that can work on that test centre and enrich their studies. So another really explicit example of a business problem that creates social impact. And he's doing many of these things. I'm just giving two examples. And that's one company in Heeshamport, employing 46 people. Now, if he can do it, and that's through his leadership, think about the scope and the opportunity right across the business sectors, in all of our locations, in all of our towns and cities to do the same.
It's a really inspiring story. And, you know, like we said, I think it's almost moving from being a single company to creating some sort of an ecosystem around you, isn't it? And you said it yourself. I think Chris's example is fascinating because of his leadership. So, and that's your area, Steve, as well. So as a professor of leadership, now, can you help us maybe relate to this debate specifically to leadership? So we talk about that sort of moral obligation. And in the book, you also talk about leadership as stewardship. So, and I know some of our guests before, some of our local entrepreneurs, they see themselves as stewards of the place. So, how do you link the good dividends with the leadership, and what is stewardship in connection to leadership? Mm,
great question. So I think my answer is going to be a strange one to begin with. And I'm going to take us back to 1972 to an album by Pink Floyd called Dark Side of the Moon. and a great track called Us and Them. In fact, there's an even better track that goes before it called Money, which captures neoliberal, self-centred whole issues that started in the 70s and has taken over. Anyway, go from Money to Us and Them. And the way our business models work is typically us versus them. And what we're trying to argue with good growth is all those stakeholders coming together. Now, in a recent bit of work I've done, it's just been published, we take that us and them and turn it into us with them. And then this is where the steward bit, I'll get to your question now, the steward bit comes in and we offer the idea of us with future us. So stewardship is taking a responsible orientation to all the stakeholders that are around us. How do we create value for all, the greatest good for the greatest number? That's a critical aspect. Then we add on the notion that future generations are sort of connected with our place, need to be brought into that same conversation. So stewardship is holding those resources, holding all those stakeholders together, moving forward, keeping a real key eye on the future us. So it's us today with future us. And how can we, in what we do every day, add greater and greater value for us as a set of stakeholders and also for those generations to come? And it's actually only thinking it through as a steward in location, in place, that gives the greatest, I think, clarity to what stewardship is about. Because if you're not anchored to place, stewardship is a bit of a floating signifier, a bit of a floating idea. What does it matter, these next generations? But when it's in your town, in your village, in your city, it matters what we do today for those to come. Mm. So Pink Floyd, who'd have thought,
Steve,
would have answers for us.
So you're a bit of a music fan.
I think I am.
Yeah. But I think we are perfectly situated here as well, us here, and the future us are here with us in the university, our students. So if we were to take your concept back to the management school, is it now time to influence our curriculum a little bit and think about us and future us instead of lecturer and student?
So I'm reminded, I got this picture which I've got on a slide. So if you picture a father and his child walking along and there's a sort of beach and horizon, and the child says to the father, "Dad, what's the purpose of business?" So I'm thinking here about business schools. Child says, "What's the purpose of business?" So the father thinks a moment, says, "Well, my son, like medicine is to health and law is to justice, business is to human flourishing." Right. Lancaster Management School is the centre of business for human flourishing. That's where I'll go then.
What a mission statement, Steve.
Is that enough?
Absolutely. And I like it. You know, I think this stuff, the concept of flourishing, has been explored academically as well. And I think that's what we are stewards for with the students. We are stewards of their path as well to help them flourish. And we flourish with them at the same time. Mm. I really want to ask you, Steve, what is your personal good dividend?
Ooh, that's a toughie. My personal good dividend. Well, in my little quiet moments, there's... I hope that the ideas of good dividends that lay out the opportunities for a regenerative economy mean that we have the ideas and scope that we could address the grand challenges of the world. And those grand challenges are ever-present in our local challenges. So when we think about modern slavery, it's around us. We think about poverty of education, poverty of housing, poverty of food. It's around us. So those grand challenges that are out with us, we think they ain't. They're here. And the idea that we could create business as human flourishing, where every day people go into work, those who lead it, those who are part of following on, they're rolling up their sleeves to address human flourishing through their everyday endeavours. So that's what I secretly, quietly hope.
And I can see a book coming up, Steve.
Human flourishing. I like it. Good title.
And so in these quiet moments, what is your place? Where are you then placed? Where do you feel happy? and anchored when you have these flourishing thoughts?
These flourishing thoughts. Well, the best thoughts there's two places. One, I'm not going to mention where my best thoughts come from, because it wouldn't go down well on the podcast. But the second time my best thoughts come is when I walk my dog. Sadly, my dog's in his last few weeks of life. So clearly I need to get another dog to carry those flourishing ideas. But in part, my place, here's a certain irony. So I'm slightly placeless because I'm retiring in a few months' time. And my place for the last 30 years has been here. And so my whole set of relationships, networks, people I know are here. So I become a bit placeless. So I think I need to re-anchor myself with a new dog in somewhere else, I think.
Steve, thank you. You will always have a place here. You're always welcome to my office, even when you are retired. And it's been fantastic talking to you. So thank you so much. It's been very inspiring. Thank you for inspiring us really to think more responsibly, thinking more purposefully as well. And that regenerative debate, I think, is something that we really need to bring much more into the curriculum. And it's not something that is far-fetched. It's right here, like you said, and it's right here in this place. So that's all for today, and I hope you enjoyed our debate. Feel free to drop us a message, comment, or recommendation of a resource, initiative, or idea for our project. And until next time, take care.